Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. I am your host, Mark Levine, and I am in gay geek heaven. I am the happiest lawyer right now. I am listening. I've been listening to the arguments before the United States Supreme Court on marriage equality, and it's everything. I'm a constitutional lawyer. It is the essence, basic question of equality, equal rights under the law, the 14th Amendment. As a constitutional lawyer, I love hearing the oral argument, the interplay among the justices, these basic questions of civil rights that and the fundamental goals of society and marriage. And then, of course, I'm also an activist. I co-founded Marriage Equality California 15 years ago. I put forward the first bill in the nation to give equal rights to gay and lesbian couples at a time when gay and lesbian organizations refused to support me, because they said that it was too radical an idea that we would have equality. And I said to them, equality is never a radical idea. Equal rights under the law is ordained in the Constitution, and to demand it is merely the right of every citizen of the United States. Obviously, we've come a long way in those 15 years from when a ragtag band of activists, myself and three others, planned what I believe may have been the first marriage protest, certainly the first Valentine's Day marriage protest in the country, when about 50 people, they tried to get married, maybe 25, 30 gay couples, lesbian couples, tried to get married. We're coming full circle. We're now at the point where 37 states have marriage equality, and the District of Columbia. 61% of Americans support marriage equality, and the Supreme Court, if oral arguments go well today, in June, might well give marriage equality to the entire nation. Again, as a constitutional lawyer, I'm loving this stuff. And I want to give you a flavor for the oral arguments. There's so much I have to say. I probably won't get it all done today, but that's fine. I'm going to listen to every single second of this and try to report back to you as much as I possibly can. To me, the most interesting arguments are made by the opponents of marriage equality, because they're clearly struggling. They cannot find a rational argument, not a compelling argument, just a rational, just a logical argument to oppose same-sex marriage. And all that Justice Scalia and his ilk can talk about is tradition. Tradition. For thousands of years, it's been this way. Therefore, it must continue. To which, of course, those that argued for equality said, you know, for thousands of years, women were the property of men. That doesn't mean it necessarily has to continue. For thousands of years, there was slavery. That doesn't mean it has to continue. And frankly, if it comes to marriage, for thousands of years, the preeminent marriage all over the world, since it's really ironic, by the way, to hear Justice Scalia talk about marriage all over the world, given that this is the justice who most emphatically says we should not listen to other countries, we should not respect what they do, we should only do what's here in the United States, and he's going on, for all over the world, we've had marriage as a man and a woman. No, Justice Scalia, check out your anthropology classes. The preeminent human form of bonding for millennia, for hundreds of thousands of years, and I don't like it either, but it was polygamy. More human societies had polygamy than had monogamy. Had several women with one man, and in a few cases, what I think they call polyandry, a few men with one woman. That was much more rare. We've had all kinds of human societies, and yes, we've had same-sex couplings as well for as long as humans have existed. Indeed, every single species on the planet, there's not a single one they found that doesn't have some same-sex coupling. And that includes, horses, dolphins, dogs, rabbits, penguins, insects, you name it. It's just a natural human condition, much like left-handedness is for human beings. And even though the vast majority of people are right-handed, we still allow left-handed people to marry. Although I must say that 6 years ago, I made the strongest possible case I could make against left-handed people marrying. And I tell you what, check that out. Just go to YouTube and type in Ban Left, and you will see me, Mark Levine, doing my very best to argue that those minorities, that left-handed people, those southpaws, those sinister, maladroit people, sinister means left and maladroit means left, for you linguists out there, that they should not be able to get married. Check it out sometimes. The best part about that clip is that the people who think I'm serious, who actually think I'm arguing against left-handed people getting married. But back to the point. I want to play for you some of the strongest arguments that the opponents of marriage equality have. They can't say that just because it existed for millions of years or thousands of years or whatever that it's right, which was Scalia's argument, because we all know that slavery, oppression, persecution, mistreatment of women, racism, religious persecution, murder because of people are different faiths or cultures or ethnicities or languages, that's existed for thousands of years too, and nobody seems to argue that that's right anymore. That's a bad argument, and the marriage equality advocates don't jump at that one. They know it's a bad argument. The second argument, the one that most people who oppose marriage equality on the street will give you, is the religious argument. Some religions think it's a sin. That's true. Some religions think it's a sin. But given the separation of church and state, that's not a legal reason, right? Orthodox Jews think eating pork is a sin. You cannot ban pork for everyone on that basis. There are religious groups that think that women not covering their arms is a sin, or not cutting their hair. Or the Amish would believe that using cars and certain things are a sin. We do not ban cars because of Amish sensibilities. We do not require women to be wearing burqas because of certain Muslim sensibilities. We simply cannot use the religious sensibilities of a few to control the entire nation. And again, the marriage equality opponents know that. But then once you take out tradition, and once you take out religion, there's very, very little standing for them left on. There are very few arguments they can make. So they're bound to make these crazy arguments that sound ridiculous. I'm going to play one for you right now that occurred today. The argument is, catch this, that because if same-sex couples are allowed to marry, then heterosexual couples won't want to anymore. And that if gay people's love and caring for each other is recognized, then follow along because it's really hard here. Then if it's recognized, then straight people will think that marriage is all about love and commitment, and it isn't. The defenders of traditional marriage argue marriage has nothing to do with love and nothing to do with commitment. Marriage is not about anything like that. Marriage is solely about procreation. And it's not even about adopting kids. It's about biological procreation. So if you think that adopted kids should have parents who are married, nope. Sorry, folks. If you've been adopted, your parents should be forcibly divorced. And furthermore, if you can't have children or don't want to have children, the defenders of traditional marriage say, you know what? You do not have a right to get married. They were asked specifically, would a state have a constitutional right to say, sorry, married couples that don't procreate aren't married? You can't get married until you have kids. You can't get married if you don't want kids. You can't get married if you can't have kids. The defenders of traditional marriage, the opposition to gay equality, say, you know what? That's just fine with us. They would forcibly divorce millions of heterosexual people before they would let one same-sex couple get married, and even then they have a problem because many same-sex couples have children, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of children being raised by gay couples. What are you going to do with them? How are you going to forcibly divorce? If you forcibly prevent them from getting married, you got to forcibly prevent the adopted kids from parents from getting married. And that would make a lot of people really upset. And then, what do you do with the fact that some gay couples have biological children? Or the fact that some heterosexual couples have biological children, divorce, and then remarry? Then the step-parent is not biological. If you want to really be consistent, you're going to have to ban divorce, ban remarriage, and not allow any step-parents. And that might make millions of Americans really angry. So they're hoist on a logical petard. They don't really want to force adopted parents to divorce, parents who have adopted children. They don't really want to force to stop all divorce. They don't really want to stop all remarriage. They don't really want to stop infertile couples or elderly couples from getting married. And yet the logic of their argument is precisely that. If you don't let same couples get married, because they can't biologically procreate, you have to be fair to equal protection under the laws, you have to exclude every other non-biological procreational couple. Even if one parent dies and remarries, sorry, the remarriage is not to someone who's the biological parent. Sorry, defenders of traditional marriage. Can't allow that either. Listen to their arguments. If it sounds weird, if it sounds illogical, just remember that these arguments were made just a few hours ago today in the nation's highest court by I believe he's the Attorney General of Michigan. A very powerful, intelligent person actually made these arguments in court. Let me play them for you.
The societal understanding of what marriage means. This is a much bigger idea than any particular couple and what marriage might mean to them or to their children. And when you change the definition of marriage to de-link the idea that we're binding children with their biological mom and dad, that has consequences. So, you know, for example, a reasonable...
Don't do that. That's the problem. Marriage doesn't do that on any level. How many married couples do fathers with the benefits or the requirements of marriage walk away from their children? So it's not that the institution alone does it, and that without it, that father is going to stay in the marriage. He made a choice. I would say that should be gender neutral. Some mothers do the same thing. But my point is that I'm not sure how I get to the point that Justice Breyer is making. How does withholding marriage from one group, same-sex couples, increase the value to the other group?
Justice Sotomayor, there's all kinds of societal pressures that are already delinking that reason that the state advances for marriage, keeping kids and their biological moms and dads together whenever possible.
Excuse me, do you have to answer that question?
See, Scalia doesn't want him to answer that question and tries to change the topic because he's really struggling there. He's really trying to make the argument. This attorney general for Michigan, he's trying to make the argument that allowing gay couples to marry, what that does is it makes marriage all about love and commitment. And that's a bad thing because marriage has nothing to do with love and commitment. Marriage is solely about protecting biological children from their biological parents. Adopted kids, be damned. Infertile couples, screw you. Couples who are in their 70s, you have no rights. Couples who don't want to have kids, you have no rights. And couples who are divorced and want to remarry, I guess you're the devil's spawn. Because clearly what he's saying is, because you understand, he can't just say the truth, which is that this is all about prejudice against gay people. Because the Supreme Court has always already recognized you can't just pass a law because you hate people. If you could, well, then all these laws would be upheld. It'd be easy. We'd move on. But he's got to make some logical distinction between gay couples who love each other and are committed and are raising children, and straight couples who are loving each other, committed, and raising children. And all they can come up with is biology. And I got to say, the connection between parents, biology, and children was shattered long ago. And I'm glad we have parents who are taking care of adopted children. Frankly, I'm glad we have parents who are remarrying and step-parents and loving families. And they're not all like Beaver Cleaver anymore. Sorry. It's Mark Levine, 888-488-MARK. I'm going to play more from the Supreme Court when we come back.
He's a Bible-quoting, Constitution-loving, flag-waving, red-blooded, liberal American. He's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. When conservatives attack, Mark Levine is ready, Constitution in hand. And here's our favorite lawyer now.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I am definitely lawyering up. I'm really enjoying listening to the oral argument of the United States Supreme Court. The opposition to marriage equality is more interesting to me. I think the arguments for it are very simple. It's equal protection under the laws and human dignity. But the people who oppose it have difficulty. In fact, the leaning argument they had first out of the box really surprised me. Their argument was people need to be able to call marriage what they want. And if the state calls it one thing, that takes away their liberty to call things what they want, which I thought was a really ridiculous idea. You know, the state can call an apple an orange and you can still call it an apple. The state can call a stool a chair and you can still say that's a stool, that's a chair, right? It doesn't make any sense. Listen, though, when they ask him what the harm is. What's the harm? Justice Ginsburg puts it succinctly.
How could that be? Because all of the incentives, all of the benefits that marriage affords would still be available. So you're not taking away anything from heterosexual couples. They would have the very same incentive to marry, all the benefits that come with marriage. But they do now.
Justice Kagan and Justice Ginsburg, it has to do with the societal understanding of what marriage means. This is a much bigger idea than any particular couple and what marriage might mean to them or to their children. And when you change the definition of marriage to de-link the idea that we're binding children with their biological mom and dad, that has consequences. So, you know, for example, a reasonable...
Don't do that. That's the problem. Marriage doesn't do that on any level. How many married couples do fathers with the benefits or the requirements of marriage walk away?
Actually, I think I played that segment already. I want to play for you a different segment from early on in the argument. Let me get to that right now.
About their sincerity. But is a
marriage institution did not develop to deny dignity or to give second-class status to anyone. It developed to serve purposes that by their nature arise from biology. Now imagine a world today where we had no marriage at all. Men and women would still be getting together and creating children, but they wouldn't be attached to each other in any social institution. Now, the marriage view on the other side here is that marriage is all about love and commitment. And as a society, we can agree that that's important. But the state doesn't have any interest in that. If we're trying to solve that social problem I just described, where there's no marriage, we wouldn't solve it by saying, well, let's have people identify who they're emotionally committed to and recognize those relationships.
Mr. Bursch, I understand.
So you got it. All right. The state has no interest in love and commitment. They don't care whether couples stay together. All they care about is connections between biological parents and their children. And when we come back, I want to play for you something that was really extraordinary, where the people who are opposing marriage equality actually make the argument that the state really doesn't have to marry people who don't want to have kids. It's extraordinary. We'll play it when we come back. This is Mark Levine. If you want to call in, 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. We'll be back with more Supreme Court argument today right after this.
Got a conservative who casually misquotes the Bible and the Constitution? Send him to school with Mark Levine.
Can be made in that institution, the state needs some reason for that exclusion.
And that's why I like to answer.
I'm giving you a real opportunity to tell me what that reason is.
We're listening to the United States Supreme Court oral arguments today that they just happened this morning. This is Mark Levine. I'm enjoying, because I always like listening to Supreme Court oral arguments, but particularly about something like this, civil rights, marriage equality, this basic human question of whether we're going to have equality under the law, under the 14th Amendment to the Constitution, these basic questions about how people have free or not free to live their lives. And, you know, it's easy, the marriage equality argument. What I find fascinating is the people who are opposed to it, because it's very, very hard to get in their minds and try to understand what they're saying. They argue that people have a right to define other people's lives, is what they're saying. And it doesn't matter whether it affects them or not. They have a right to basically tell other people what to do with their lives. And so Justice Kagan asks, well, how does it harm straight couples if gay couples get married? And I'm going to play this at length because I really want you to get a flavor for the nature of the argument, though I'm sure I'll barge in and say something at some point. This is the United States Supreme Court This Morning.
Yes. What is the reason for the exclusion rather than the reason for the non-inclusion?
Well, first, it wasn't a reason for an exclusion. It was a definition to solve a particular problem. But the reason why there's harm if you change the definition, because in people's minds, if marriage and creating children don't have anything to do with each other, then what do you expect? You expect more children outside of marriage. Now,
okay, got this? If gay people are allowed to get married, fewer straight people will get married and will have more kids outside of marriage. That is their argument. That is their argument. Well, if that person get married, I don't want to do it anymore. If we allow blacks in our country club, then we white people don't want to be in our country club. If gay people get married, then marriage has no meaning. Count me out of it. I'm having my kids out of wedlock. That is their argument. And listen as the justices press him on a very illogical argument.
I want to give you a hypothetical. Imagine two couples.
Do you think that that's what it would do, Mr. Bursch, that if one allowed same-sex marriage, one would be announcing to the world that marriage and children have nothing to do with each other?
Not in the abstract, you know, or that concrete.
Well, not in the abstract, not in the concrete.
Well, let me give you an example.
That's important because he said concretely it didn't matter. He couldn't prove that it would concretely affect straight couples. And now he's saying it doesn't affect them abstractly. So if it's not abstract, it's not concrete, it's really hard to find the harm.
We're talking about something that's going to change the meaning of the institution over generations. And you know, you have things like no-fault divorce where we tweaked what marriage means. And it had consequences over the long term that some people didn't expect.
Okay, I have to interrupt. If you don't like no-fault divorce, ban no-fault divorce. If your argument is that couples should stay together no matter what, that even if they don't love each other, even if they're not committed to each other, that they should stay together for the children, and many, many couples believe that that should happen. But if you believe the state should force that loveless marriage to continue, you could make a law, and there were laws for many, many decades. In fact, if you want to talk about tradition, the tradition is that love and commitment don't go into marriage. The tradition is, in this country and all around the world, the woman is the property of the man. She must do what he says. He takes her as his wife, and she's his property. In fact, married women couldn't even own property in their own names until the 20th century. Did you know that? In the 19th century and earlier, a married woman's property belonged to her husband. Great reason to marry a rich woman. Hey, George Washington did it. Married a rich widow, Martha, who had just recently been widowed, got all her property. Did very well that way. That was the tradition. So what he's saying is, well, you know, love and commitment, that's not what matters. We do not want to let we want to force loveless marriages to continue. Well, you know what? That's an argument against no-fault divorce. And you can make that argument. I frankly don't know that that's best for society, but that's a separate argument. He's saying that because straight couples have argued that they should be able to get divorces more easily and have used those rights to get divorces more easily, gay couples shouldn't get married. And if you fail to find the logical connection between these two arguments, you're not the only one. I can't figure it out either, but let's let him try to explain it to us.
I want you to think about two couples that are identically situated. They've been married for 5 years, and they each have a 3-year-old child. One grows up believing that marriage is about keeping that couple bound to that child forever. The other couple believes that that marriage is more about their emotional commitment to each other, and if that commitment fades, then they may not stay together. A reasonable voter, which is what we're talking about here, could believe that there would be a different outcome if those two marriages were influenced by those two different belief systems. Ideas matter, Your Honors. And you know, the out-of-wedlock birth rate...
But that assumes that same-sex couples could not have the more noble purpose. And that's the whole point. Same-sex couples say, of course we understand the nobility and the sacredness of marriage. We know we can't procreate, but we want the other attributes of it.
That is crucial, not because of the question, but because who asked the question. That was Justice Anthony Kennedy. That was the swing vote on the court. That was the recognition that gay couples have the same human dignity that straight couples have. And that is the reason why I think it's going to come down a 5-4 in that respect. It's going to come down for marriage equality.
In order to show that we, too, have a dignity that can be fulfilled.
And Justice... But
you argued in your brief, and Justice Kagan was quite correct to say, is that you're saying that this harms conventional marriage. That was the argument you made in your brief, as I understood it.
Justice Kennedy, to be perfectly clear, the state of Michigan values the dignity and worth of every human being, no matter their orientation or how they choose to live their life. That's not what this case is about. Our point is that when you change something as fundamental as the marriage definition, as Chief Justice Roberts was saying, the dictionary definition which has existed for millennia, and you apply that over generations, that those changes matter. And it's not unreasonable.
That's true, but I mean, the fact is that X percent, a very high percent of opposite sex people don't have children, and everybody knows they can't, and a certain percentage, I'm sure probably pretty high, of those who get married, of same sex people who get married do have children. So where is this going? I mean, what are these two couple to do with it? I mean, how do we get from what I just said
to
some kind of rational or important distinction?
We're concerned about all the children of opposite sex couples and children of same sex couples. There are 73 million children in this country. If this court ensconces in the Constitution a new definition of marriage, and it reduces the rate that opposite-sex couples stay together, bound to their children, because of that different understanding, even a 1%
child what evidence is
many,
there
many
of that?
Children. A reasonable voter, again, looking at those two couples that I just described, one believing that marriage is all about staying with their kids, the other one believing it's all about emotion and commitment, could have different results.
Okay, all right, so... this is real important. I want you to listen to this really closely. That's what he's saying. That if gay people can get married, straight people will desert their children. The essence, the best case they can make for not letting gay people get married, is not that gay people are bad or ignoble or going to harm their children. They know that's not true. Their argument is that straight people will be bad and ignoble and harm their children if gay people can get married. You understand? That is their argument. Yeah, we can trust gay people with kids. That's no problem. We can't trust straight people with kids. They're going to abandon their husbands and wives, maybe even just 1%. But you know, if we give equal rights to this group of people, to gay people, those great parents over there, straight people, we know they're not that great as parents. They're going to leave their kids. Wouldn't a religious person be offended by this argument? That straight couples can't be trusted to stay together for their kids, can't be trusted to take care of their kids because they hate gay people more than they love their husbands and wives and kids? That's their argument? It is. And of course, it's ridiculous. And of course, he's called out for it.
And it's reasonable to believe that.
That even under a rational basis standard, do we accept a feeling? I mean,
this is Justice Kagan. This is the guy just feels that straight couples will abandon their marriages if gay couples are allowed to get married. And she's saying, is this feeling that you have, this really offensive feeling towards heterosexual families, is this feeling a good enough reason to deny this fundamental right to marriage to a whole group of American citizens?
Why, and I think Justice Kagan put the argument quite clearly, with something as fundamental as marriage, why would that feeling, which doesn't make any logical sense, control our decision making?
It doesn't make any logical sense to you that if people think love is, or marriage is more about love and commitment than about staying bound to your child forever, that there might be different consequences when people
but
are...
My problem is that I think people who get into marriage think that. Heterosexual couples.
I think everyone gets
everybody that. Has their own vision of what marriage is, but what the state confers is certain obligations.
Yes.
And they're willing to accept those. Whether or not that couple stays together, they're bound to that child. They have to support the child. They have to care for him or her. Some people choose voluntarily, meaning they just choose because they don't want to. But that happens in whether it's same-sex or heterosexual couples.
Right. But what you're describing are different ways that people think about marriage. And certainly it's a harm to a child of an opposite-sex couple if they get divorced as opposed to stay together forever. I mean, I think we can all agree that, in general, that we want kids to stay bound to their biological mother and father whenever possible. That's the whole definition. And what I hear are lots of other...
No, I think they should be bound to their parent because there's a lot of adopted children, and they're not thinking of biological mother.
Oh, sure. That's a completely different situation.
You know,
right. I mean, that's a situation where the child doesn't have their biological mom and dad anymore for whatever reason. And so that's a different state interest.
Suppose this.
Thank you, first of all, Justice Kagan, for bringing up adoption. Because this advocate is basically disrespecting all the many, many wonderful families where people have raised adopted children. But he says, well, with adopted children, the biological parent isn't available. So it will allow it. Well, with same-sex couples, often the biological parent isn't available. A lot of those kids are adopted. Sometimes it's sperm donors. Sometimes it's people who do not want to raise children, allowing their genetic seed to be used for children. It does not explain how you could possibly help the kids of same-sex couples to deny their parents equal rights under the law, which, let's face it, hurts the kids. If mommy can't pick you up at school and only biological mommy can, that hurts the kid. If daddy can't visit you in the hospital, even though daddy adopted you, and the only person who can visit you in the hospital is the egg donor who doesn't live in the same state, doesn't that hurt the kid? Is anyone thinking about the kids here? Again, the opening argument of this guy at the very, very beginning, the first argument he made was that we need to do this because people have a right to define other people's marriages. To which point I simply say, we have enough problems without worrying about controlling the lives of people we don't even know. This is Mark Levine. We'll be playing more when we come back. 888-488-MARK if you want to call in. 888-488-6275. Right back, right after this.
And we're asking you to affirm every individual's fundamental liberty interest in deciding the meaning of marriage. And I think this whole case really turns on the questions that Justice Alito
nobody's
asked.
Nobody's taking that away from anybody.
You got it? This isn't about whether gay people and their kids should be allowed to have equal rights under the law and the kids should have equal rights and rights to human dignity. This is about the way that other people have a liberty interest, he said. The freedom to define other people's rights. If gay people can get married, then straight people who don't want gay people to get married will suffer. Why? Because they don't want it. Why? Because it'll play with their minds. Because they can't conceive of equality. I get that. God knows when we freed the slaves, that was really harmful on white Southerners who could not conceive of a free black man. Certainly, when we abolished the bans on interracial marriage, that played havoc with people's minds, people who could not conceive of interracial mixing. That's true. That's true. Bigots never like equality. It hurts them. But that's the liberty interest we're protecting? The right of bigotry? The right of people to hate others and to control their lives, even though they don't know them, that's the whole reason? Well, yeah. That's his best argument. It's the argument he put forth first. The Solicitor General of Michigan or whoever it was that was arguing against marriage equality. I'll play some of the defenders in a bit of marriage equality, but their arguments ring true and are, you know, stirring. I'll play them at the end. They're actually easy to listen to. I think more interesting is listening to the people who are opposed. And watch what happens when after this guy is going on and on and on about marriage being all about procreation, when the judges raise to this guy the next logical question.
To say, is it, you're saying that this harm...
What do we get from what I just...
Hold on. Wait, I gotta find the exact point. It's right there.
Right. I mean, that's a situation where the child doesn't have their biological mom and dad anymore for whatever reason. And so that's a different state interest.
Suppose that there's a state with a very procreation-centered view of marriage of the kind that you're talking about. And, so emotional commitment and support, all of these, the state thinks are not the purpose of marriage, and they want their marriage licenses to be addressed only to the things which serve this procreation purpose. And so they say, well, we're not giving marriage licenses to anybody who doesn't want children. So when people come in and ask for a marriage license, they just ask a simple question, do you want children? And if the answer is no, the state says no marriage license for you. Would that be constitutional?
Well, that would cut against the state's interest, as you've just described it, because...
No, the state has this, it's not a perfect correlation, but the state says that the best way to promote this procreation-centered view of marriage is just to limit marriage to people who want children. So that's what it does. Would that be constitutional?
But Justice Kagan, even people who come into a marriage thinking they don't want to have children often end up with children. And that state's interest
in
binding those...
But what is your answer
said,
to the
Justice
question?
Kennedy?
What is your answer to the question?
Would it be constitutional?
Yes.
I think it would be an unconstitutional invasion of privacy to ask the question.
To ask if you want children is an unconstitutional invasion of privacy?
I think that would be the case, yes, just like it would be unconstitutional.
Suppose a couple, a 70-year-old couple. Comes in and they want it. Don't have to ask them any questions. You know they're not going to have any children.
Good question, Justice Ginsburg. And given that a lot of the court is in their 70s, I'm sure that had a lot of appeal to the audience. It's an unconstitutional invasion of privacy to ask a couple whether they want children or not. Now, I want you to think about this, because there was a case in Texas recently where there was a question about the physical characteristics. It was a transgender person. They were getting married, and they would only allow opposite-sex couples to marry in Texas. So the question was, what is the gender of the person? And they actually required the person to take off their clothes and show their genitalia before you could find out whether they could get married. So Texas had no problem forcing someone to strip naked. That's not an unconstitutional invasion of privacy. But asking people whether they want kids, that's a unconstitutional invasion of privacy? Damn right this guy's struggling. In the few minutes I have left, I do want to play from the people who support marriage equality and the beautiful words of the Solicitor General of the United States on this question.
A little time that I have left, I'd like to suggest this, that what the respondents are ultimately saying to the court is that with respect to marriage, they're not ready yet. And yes, gay and lesbian couples can live openly in society, and yes, they can raise children. Yes, they can participate fully as members of their community. Marriage, though, not yet. Leave that to be worked out later. But the petitioners, these gay and lesbian couples are...
Or not. I mean, that's not what they're saying. They're saying leave it to the people.
That's Justice Scalia. Basically, I don't have time, but he goes on to say they're already raising kids. The time is now. We're going to talk more about this next week. If you want to comment, go to my website, marklevinetalk.com. Follow me on Twitter @marklevinetalk. Talk to you tomorrow.